greet you this morning in Jesus' name. It's been a tremendous blessing to have been here this morning. And as Brother Mike already shared, after the storm, seeing the sunshine, it makes us feel good, doesn't it? I've entitled the message today, Encouragement for Our Fellow Christians. Encouragement for Our Fellow Christians. As I was thinking and studying for this message, I've been doing so for around a month or so. As I was going through a lot of content, I seemed to get pulled into various directions. But I don't know that the content of this message today is so all about the encouragement from within the church one to another, but that was the intent. For this scope today was for how do we encourage one another as fellow churchgoers here at Calvary? How do we encourage one another? Church life is unique. Sometimes in business, if I can use that illustration, we get to know our coworkers quite well. And sometimes we get to know the things that are negative too. And so it is in church life. We're here to work together, are we not, towards a common goal and mission. Sometimes we learn about each other's faults, shortcomings, whatever it is. And we need encouragement. I'd like to read from Hebrews chapter 10 for a text. In Hebrews chapter 10, we'll read in verse 23, starting in verse 23. It says there, let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Just a couple of things from this text that stand out to me. He admonishes us or encourages us to assemble and not to forget that. Why is that? Well, the last sentence there is, as you see the day approaching, there is a day coming. There is a day when God will bring his church back to himself. There is also a day of trying, and it talks about that in this scripture here. In the other verses, we won't go into that. But there was a trying of God's people in the Old Testament that I'd like to look at for a scope about this thing of positive and negative circumstances. And we see here that gathering ourselves together, we can provoke each other to love and to good works, and thereby undergird each other and encourage each other along this journey. I'd like to turn to Numbers chapter 13 and read there the account of the spies. And we see what happens when we have folks that focus on the negative circumstances of life. That is in Numbers chapter 13. While you're turning there, I'd like to point out just a couple of other things. I was very blessed and encouraged with the devotional this morning, as well as also several text messages that I received this morning. It was very encouraging to receive those. And I would like to be known for doing that more. Just commend those that do that. What a blessing. It really makes me feel good about being here and sharing this morning. In the bulletin this morning, it says under the announcements there, a verse there, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Just from Joshua 1:9. That really spoke to me as I read that this morning as an affirmation for the message. Joshua, we know, faced insurmountable circumstances in his tenure as leader of the children of Israel. And he is a good character to look at with regards to courage. Certainly we know that the word courage is embedded in the word discouragement as well as in the word encouragement. So maybe today we'll look a little bit more into that. So to Numbers chapter 13. We read here the account of the spies, where they were to go and search out the land that they were to go into and overcome. And we see what turned out there. Starting to read in verse 1, it says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them. And Moses Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran, and all those men were heads of the children of Israel." Now I'd like to skip and go to verse 17. "And Moses said to them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong, weak, few, or many, and what the land is that they may dwell in, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there would be wood therein or not. And be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land." Now the time was at the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, and the men to Hamath. And the men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron, where Ahiam and Shai and Talmai, the children of Anak, were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And then they came into the brook of Eshcol and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grape, and they bare it between two upon a staff. And they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. The place was called the brook of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence. And they returned from the searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran and Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, "We came into the land whither thou sentest us. Surely and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and Jebusites and the Amorites dwell on the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea, by the coast of Jordan." And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men that went up with him said, "We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, "The land, the which we have gone to search it, is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we are in their sight." Going on into chapter 14, "And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness." I think I'll pause reading there. A couple of things we see here is how that they were sent to search out this land, and they made observations. Today, as you look in your life, and as you look into the lives of our brothers and sisters, what are the observations that we make? We all have our personalities, and we all have our strengths and weaknesses. It's easy to get distracted and see those negative things in our lives or in the lives of our brothers and sisters. Does that mean positives do not exist? No, I don't think so. We see here how that Caleb and Caleb noted that there were positive things that he saw. And it says in verse 30, "And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." So as you look into this Christian life and you look at the battle that we face, what do you see? Do you see our God there as able and capable of helping us? Or do you see these circumstances that are insurmountable? It says in verse 32, they described it, the land that which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. If you look into life and the things that come at us, we don't have to look around too long until it seems that we might be consumed. We're overcome. We're overcome with emotion. We're overcome with grief at some of the loss that we see. It's very important that we have an understanding of God in times that are challenging and difficult. The spies focus on challenges rather than God's character, and as a result, they spread negativity all through the camp. As we assemble together, as we interact one with another, what do we spread throughout the camp? The lesson for us is that when challenges are great, we need to shift our focus off our problems and fix it firmly on the Lord. Here's some time ago, Vicki and Wilson and I decided to go hiking. And so we hiked to a place in the woods, and we encountered a stream. And they got across. I didn't exactly see how they got across. I think they had boots that were waterproof. And for me, my boots weren't waterproof, so I was concerned about getting wet. So as I analyzed the stream, there was a wider portion, but it was more shallow, and there was a narrower portion that wasn't quite so shallow. And usually I'm a fairly decisive personality, and as I approached this, I thought, well, I'll jump over this rather easily. They were ready on the other side. And so I analyzed, and the more I analyzed, the more nervous I got. And the more nervous I got, the more unsure I was of myself. So I'd back up a little bit and start forward, and it just didn't feel right. It didn't seem to me that I was going to make it across. Well, they were watching, and I didn't want to be, I didn't want to be the wimp and not at least try. So I tried. I picked the best spot that I could find. And I jumped as hard as I could and landed right in the middle of the stream. And I got all wet. Upon climbing out and getting on the other side and turning to observe, I saw that where I had stood and decided to jump from was a soft mound of dirt. It wasn't solid. So when I sprang to jump, it gave and wiped out my momentum. So I don't think I'm an old man yet or can't do it. I just picked a poor spot to jump from. Sometimes in life we attempt things and people observe. They were very nice. They didn't make any demeaning comments or pick on me or anything like that. But sometimes it's easy for us to focus on the performance of our fellow Christians. And we point that out rather than saying it's a good day. It's a good thing that there's sunny today because you'll dry soon, even though you got wet. There's always good things that we can say. It's so important where we focus. I was encouraged the other day when my sister shared with me several things. She didn't know that I was studying for this, and she was telling me the benefits that have been found from positive thinking, thinking good thoughts from a health standpoint. There is a book that's been written by Andrew Newberg. He's an MD. And the book is entitled Words Can Change Your Brain. I'll just read a couple of excerpts from that. Sometimes it feels as if the more we talk, the less we are heard. But it is groundbreaking research. Andrew Newberg, MD, and Mark Robart-Wildman have discovered a powerful strategy called compassionate communication that allows two brains to work together as one. In 12 clear steps, compassionate communication actually changes our brain structure, as well as the brain of the person we are talking to, in a way that helps establish a bond between people. In this unique state, free from conflict and distrust, we can communicate more effectively, listen more deeply, collaborate without effort, and succeed more quickly at any task. Using data collected from MBA students, couples in therapy, caregivers and brain scans, Newberg and Waldman have seen again and again that compassionate communication can transform a difficult conversation into a deeply satisfying one, literally in a matter of a few minutes. So again, perspective. So as we engage with our fellow Christians, what do we bring to the table in communication? I'd like to share a story with you. And I had shared this story with Vicki and Wilson. And Wilson pointed out that I had shared this story at school several years ago, or we thought it might have been several years ago. So if you children remember this story, forgive me for repeating it, but I thought, well, even though it's somewhat of a children's story, I think us adults can really benefit from this story. It's called The Group of Frogs, and maybe you're familiar with it. Maybe you've already heard it. The story is a group of frogs was traveling through the woods on a rainy day. While they were moving on a small road, two of them slipped and fell into a deep pit. The other frogs crowded around the pit to help their two friends. The pit was deep, and none of them could provide any help. They told the two frogs that there was no hope left for them. However, the two frogs ignored what the others were saying and decided to try getting out of the pit. They began to jump as high as they could. Despite their best efforts, the group of frogs at the top of the pit were still saying to them, "Stop trying and just give up. You'll never make it anyway." Eventually, one of the frogs took heed to what the others were saying, and he gave up, falling down to his death at the bottom of the pit. The other frog, however, continued to jump as hard as he could. Again, the crowd of frogs at the top yelled at him to just stop and stop the pain and just die. However, he commenced to jump even harder, and then finally he reached the top. When he got out, the other frog said, "Did you not hear us?" The frog explained to them that he was mostly deaf, and while they were discouraging him, he thought they were encouraging him the whole time. And it got him out of the pit. Sometimes as Christians, we too need to tone out. We need to tone out negative thoughts, negative voices, negative beliefs that we have in our lives. What we believe will affect our behavior. Those are actually the words from Ken Davis, motivational speaker. The moral of the story, the power of words, encouraging words can go such a long way. Your encouraging and positive words can make a difference in someone's life, no matter how difficult the situations are for him or her. Be careful while you speak with others and think about what you say before it just comes out of your mouth. It might be the difference between life and death. Just as we see in the story of the frog, it was the difference between life and death. For the one versus the other. The one died and was at the bottom of the pit, and the other one was able to jump out. We are in a world filled with negative things. Recently, I heard of a young girl in a neighboring community that took her life, and she's a friend of someone that works for us. And I don't know many circumstances, I don't know many details. But God help us to know that our words matter and that we never know when someone is facing a crisis in their life and how that our words can lift them up. Researchers studying the impacts of positive thinking and communication are baffled by the amount of good that has been discovered to come from positive words. Numerous things here that I jotted down: increased lifespan, lower rates of depression, lower levels of distress and pain, greater resistance to illnesses, better psychological and physical well-being, better cardiovascular health, and reduce risk of death from cardiovascular disease and strokes. A reduce of death from cancer. A reduced risk of death from respiratory conditions. A reduced risk of death from infections. Better coping skills during hardships and times of stress. All these are things that researchers are noting. Some of the pitfalls of negative thinking. I think it's important that we also identify what it is that drags us down. Some of the pitfalls of negative thinking that they've also outlined. One of them is a condition called guilt filtering. When we feel guilty and we filter out positive things that happen in our lives, this can further challenge us. For example, in the evening, if we focus only on our plan to do even more tasks and forget about the compliments you received for the day, that could be eliminating that good in our mind and in our hearts. Personalizing is another thing. When something bad occurs, you automatically blame yourself. For example, you hear that an evening out with friends is canceled, and you assume that the change in plans is because no one wanted to be around you. Another one is catastrophizing. You automatically anticipate the worst without facts that the worst will happen. The drive-through coffee shop gets your order wrong when you think that the rest of your day will be a disaster. Another one is blaming. You try to say someone else is responsible for what happened to you instead of yourself. You avoid being responsible for your thoughts and feelings. Perfectionism. Keeping impossible standards and trying to be more perfect sets yourself up for failure. Those are negative things that we have challenges with. But what about more positive things? You can learn to turn negative thinking into positive thinking. The process is simple, but it does take time and practice. You're creating a new habit, after all. Following are some ways to think and behave in a more positive and optimistic way. One of the things we can do is to identify areas to change. If you want to become more optimistic and engage in more positive thinking, first identify areas of your life that you usually think negatively about. Maybe it's the weather. Maybe it's your work. Maybe it's even going to church. Think of a positive thought to manage your stress instead of a negative one. Check yourself periodically during the day and stop to evaluate what you're thinking. If you find that your thoughts are mainly negative, try to find a way to put a positive spin on them. Another positive thing we can do is to be open to humor. I know for me sometimes it's hard to laugh at myself, but I think it's important. And I think it's also helped me to embrace humility. Such as when I try to jump a creek and I land in the middle of it instead of getting across. I have several examples here of what a negative outlook will say to itself and what a positive outlook will say to itself. The negative outlook says, I've never done it before. The positive outlook says, it's an opportunity to learn something new. The negative outlook says, it's too complicated. A positive outlook says, I'll tackle it from a different angle. The negative outlook says, I don't have the resources. The positive outlook says, necessity is the mother of invention. I'm going to try and figure out something. The negative outlook says, I'm too lazy to get this done. The positive outlook says, I couldn't fit it into my schedule, but I can re-examine some of my priorities. Sometimes it takes just a little work to take a negative thought and to turn it into a positive one. But certainly we see here that it can be done. A couple more here. The negative says, no one bothers to communicate with me. The positive says, I'll see if I can open new channels of communication. The negative says, I'm not going to get any better at this. Sometimes, I remember in school, we sometimes heard that. Someone needs some encouragement. Maybe they feel like a flop. That's the negative. The positive is, I'll give it another try. One of these times, my efforts will yield in a breakthrough. When your state of mind is generally optimistic, you're better able to handle everyday stress in a more constructive way. That ability may contribute to the widely observed health benefits of positive thinking. I have another story that I'd like to look at. It's the story of the carrot, the egg, and the coffee bean. I don't know if you've heard this one before. I don't want to bore you to death, but this is about the carrot, the egg, and the coffee bean. I'd like to exchange the carrot for potatoes in this illustration. This illustration, they cook the carrot, and they note what happens to the carrot. I think carrots impart a good bit of flavor into the water. I never enjoy cooked carrots. Maybe I'll come back to cooked carrots a little bit later on. But in this story, potatoes, eggs, and coffee, when you put them in hot water, what happens? A young woman went to her mother and told her about her life and how things were so hard for her. She did not know how she was going to be able to make it and wanted to give up. She was tired of fighting and struggling. It seemed as though one problem was solved and a new one arose. Her mother took her to the kitchen. She filled three pots with water and placed each one on high fire. Soon the pots came to a boil. In the first, she placed potatoes. In the second, she placed eggs. And in the last, she placed ground coffee beans. She let them sit and boil without saying a word. In about 20 minutes, she turned off the burners. She fished the potatoes out, placed them in a bowl. She pulled the eggs out, placed them in a bowl. Then she ladled the coffee out, placed it in a bowl. Turning to her daughter, she asked, "Tell me what you see." "Potatoes, eggs, and coffee," she replied. Her mother brought her closer and asked her to feel the potatoes. She did and noted that they were soft. The mother then asked the daughter to take an egg and break it. After pulling off the shell, she observed the hard-boiled egg. Finally, the mother asked the daughter to sip the coffee. The daughter smiled as she tasted its rich aroma. The daughter then asked, "What does this mean, mother?" Her mother explained that each of these objects had faced the same adversity, boiling water. Each reacted differently. The potato went in strong, hard, and unrelenting. However, after being subjected to the boiling water, it softened and became weak. The egg had been fragile. Its thin outer shell protected its liquid interior, but after sitting through the boiling water, its inside became hardened. The ground coffee beans were unique. However, after they were in the boiling water, they had changed the water. So which are you? What are you aiming to be today? A potato, an egg, or coffee? Now, I know these are just foods, and one may like one or the other. Some may not like coffee, and it's just an illustration. But we see the different reactions when we are faced with adversity and hardship. How do we react? Which one will we be? Are we going to give in adversity, or are we going to take and keep that within ourselves and become hard like the egg? Or are we going to simply turn into a soft, useless mush? There's a quote that I'd like to share that someone made. It says, "When you were born, you were crying, and everyone around you was smiling. Live your life so that at the end, you're the one who is smiling, and everyone around you is crying." I'd like now to turn to a chapter in Joshua. If I can lay my eyes on my reference here. It's either Joshua chapter 1 or 2, and maybe I have it marked here. I guess in my haste, I didn't mark it. Let me see here. Let's just go to Joshua chapter 1. It says there, sort of coming back to this story about the spies. It says there, now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, and that I have given unto you, as I said unto Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites and of the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. And as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Be strong and of good courage, for unto this people shall thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. I'll leave it at that. We see here where Joshua brought the people into this land that the spies had told them was full of adversity. The spies also brought back some of the grapes and some of the good things from that land. But they said that the people were there as giants, and that they would be consumed by them, and that they wouldn't be able. We see what Joshua and Caleb looked for and saw, and the understanding that they had in their God, that he would bring them through, and that he would give the land to them that God had promised them for an inheritance. Turning to a chapter in Peter, there's a couple of verses there I'd like to share in conclusion. In 1 Peter chapter 3, in verse 8, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8 says, Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye shall inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. I'll conclude there. We see where he encourages us to watch what we say in verse 10. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. As you go from day to day in your walk, and as you do so with your fellow Christians, may God help us to think about the words that we speak, and that they be encouraging words, life-giving words, knowing that God wants us all to come together to the inheritance that he has for us. This time, let's kneel for a word of prayer.